the board meeting back to order. And let's see.
According to Jerry, advise the board has not taken any formal action on the matters discussed while in executive session. All right, next up on our agenda is, and I'd like to do is get the resolutions on the table, and then we'll discuss them. So, loan resolution number L15-04 Brooks Grange Camp LLC North Slope.
Chairman, I'll move the resolution.
I'll second.
All right, resolutions before us. Discussion, John.
All right, item 7D, loan resolution L15-04, regards the purchase by the authority of a participation in a loan to Brooks Camp LLC, Man Camp in Deadhorse. At this time, I'll ask Chris Anderson to present.
Thank you.
And to the extent you wanted to bring other sites.
We'll do that. I'll give an overview, I think, if that's all right. This is a request, as you can see, from Northern Bank. Borrower is Brooks Camp LLC, and co-borrower is Brooks Grange Supply, Inc. Guarantors are Caldwell Holding LLC and Mark Helmrich. This is for long-term financing for a man camp in Deadhorse, Alaska, 334-room camp. Approximately 32 to 36 new jobs will be created as a result of the project. The management is being handled by Craig Welch, who's the camp manager for Brooks Grange Supply, Inc. and Brooks Camp LLC. He is also present with us, as is Mr. Helmrich. The collateral, we'll be taking a UCC filing on the project. And the project has been appraised at $38,100,000, which gives us a 75% loan value, which under our guidelines is acceptable. The debt service coverage is 1.73 per the appraisal, and per their accounting and net revenue, 2.32:1. ADA would require an assignment of rent, an assignment of the leasehold interest, because this is on leased land, and subject to the subject property along with the consent to that assignment. There are no known environmental issues on the property, and we've listed out what we consider to be both the strengths and the weaknesses of this credit. The strengths that we see is that there's a good historical operating history relationship for the past 30 years of camp operations with these oil companies. They have experienced management. It is new construction in a historically strong lodging market. They have modern technology, structural and operational efficiencies that have been incorporated in the construction of these units. The guarantors have a strong net worth. There's a good relationship and character of management. And also they have national grade companies on contract with both BP and ASRC. The weaknesses or perceived weaknesses that we observed is that this is 100%, for the most part, reliant on the oil industry, but we're going to speak to that a little more. Short-term company contracts, leasehold property, and a remote location with potentially severe weather conditions. In regards to diversification on the portfolio, and these would be as of year-end 14 numbers, there's 0% of statewide portfolio in man camps. It is somewhat specialized in the northern region, and that would increase simply because of the size to 73.22%. And in the northern region, and 5.39% statewide. Staff is recommending this credit. We did incorporate several covenants that the bank also has suggested, in that there would be a bank certification that funds were used for eligible purposes. We require that be done. Replacement reserves put in place that has been recommended by the appraiser, and that would have to be acceptable to the authority as well. We've asked for life insurance on Mark Helmrich and Eric Helzer, again acceptable to the authority. Assignment of rents, assignment of the leasehold interests, and consent to assignment, all again acceptable to the authority. And then we would be paying off Pacific Western their balance plus 30 days interest. I can take questions that you have, but what I would also like to do, and you can tell me whether you have time to do this today, but the borrower also has come to us with a brief PowerPoint that I think will help you in giving you an overview of Dead Horse.
Mm-hmm.
This is a rather unique location. I thought it would give you a good perspective on what is happening in Dead Horse beyond just the physical collateral of the man camp. And so if you're open to that, I would like Mark Helmrich to join us.
Well, let's wait to see board questions we have first. Chris, so are there any questions or questions? So Chris, I have a couple. Reference appraisal. Is this appraisal is this camp a permanent camp or affordable?
They are modulars.
Okay.
They're modular units. They were built by Builder's Choice. I went out to Builder's Choice and watched the manufacturing of them. For any who have been here during the 70s and 80s, I mean, they're substantially different than the ATCO units that are on the slope. They're very well built, but in answer to your question, they are portable.
So they're standalone units.
Mm-hmm.
Not like the modular. The Millennium Hotel is a modular built hotel, but you can't take it apart and move it.
It's my understanding these can be taken apart and moved. Mm-hmm.
And the appraisal is granted to the appraiser in relative to man camps up on the North Slope.
I had a few conversations with the appraiser, and actually on the personal side, he has investments and knowledge of facilities in the Dakotas, in South and North Dakota. So he had some knowledge of, generally speaking, of the oil industry, and he's also observed how these units are put together. So, relatively, to the appraisers, to the commercial appraisers out there, I felt that he did a good job.
Okay. And then you mentioned assignment of rents.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a hotel, are there long-term offices rent or something, or how do you get assignment of rents?
Well, they do have a contract, not for the full facility, but they have a contract with BP and ASRC.
Okay, for beds?
Mm-hmm. For rooms. Yeah, for rooms over time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So each one of those that they do, you'll get assigned to that?
Yes, if they're on contract.
Mm-hmm. Does it have to go past just out of curiosity, a certain time limit, so many man days before the assignment? I go up for a week and I want to rent 50 rooms. Is that?
Oh no, their contracts I believe are a year, so you'd want it for longer term than that.
Okay.
Yeah, there are other companies that come in and out, but I would think you'd want it for at least a year.
Mr. Chairman,
right.
Two questions. First, I just can't find the interest rate.
Oh, for ourselves?
Yes.
5.36.
I missed it somewhere. And secondly, follow up, Mr. Chairman. On page 5, it has a footnote to the market competition analysis, or not a footnote, the parentheses. It says at the time the appraisal was written, oil prices were $97 a barrel. Talking new drilling plans as of today, they're under $45. Just has the decline in pricing affected the drilling forecast for the slope and the market analysis for this month?
I think I would like the borrower to probably respond to that for the industry, but in regards to the collateral, the man camp, the answer to that is no. And we can show you that with the numbers.
Okay.
Most of your man camps up there are about 85% full, and their range is 85 to 95% full, so I don't think they get impacted. No. But I think this presentation will give you more of an indication as to why that is occurring that way.
Okay, any other questions for Jerry?
So this is a 15-year term on the loan with a 25-year fixed amortization?
No, it's 15.
It's 15.
15 self-amortizing.
Okay, it's a 15 amortized. It's a fixed for 25 years. Term 15 and not. Even though, so that's what it says in the memorandum. So.
Oh, I apologize. That is a typo. Thank you for catching that. Thank you.
I wanted to know if we were going to have a balance at 15 with a term or something. So,
No, it is 15, so and, amortizing. And we're so used to putting 25 in there. I apologize for that.
And I'm sure the industry is going to tell us that they have plans to still be active on the North Slope 15 years from now.
Yes.
What's the pleasure of the board as far as the presentation? Or do we
I would that? Like to see it.
Is it different than this?
Is it different than the than this?
No.
This is it?
Yes. That is the presentation. I mean, there'll be discussion with it, but yes, that is the presentation.
This is sufficient for me.
That's good for me.
This is good for me.
Mr. Chairman, with all, I'd be interested just because it's a chance to learn about the slope in a deeper way by somebody that originally supports it. I know we're in a hurry. Maybe we could do it in 10 minutes or something. Or I could do it offline.
There you go.
Okay.
I'll do that. All right. Any other questions?
Question's
been asked. Can we just call the board?
Mr. Wilkin.
Aye.
Deputy Chairman Perez.
Aye.
Ms. Nygaard.
Yes.
Mr. Hughes.
Yes.
Deputy Chairman Burnett.
Yes.
Mr. Dick.
Yes.
Mr. Cruz?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Okay. Next up is Loan Resolution L15-05, a corporation, Huna Totem Dock.
Come on, you want to try that one?
Chairman, I would move Loan Resolution L15-05
I'll say. We call it XKA.
Yeah, there you go. John?
So, item 70, Loan Resolution L15-05, regards purchase by the authority of participation in a loan to Hunakauane Corporation. I ask Chris Anderson to present.
I'd ask how to pronounce it.
My vote depends on how she pronounces it.
It's Hunakauane, is how you say it. So. Anyway, this is also a loan participation request. Coming to us from Northrim on an 80-20 split with a gross loan of $25 million. ADA is being asked to participate in $20 million of this loan, and this one is a 25-year loan. the guarantors are Icy Straight Point LLC, Huna Totem Corp, Ducks Point Development LLC, and we also will have a 90% BIA guarantee on this credit. It's for long-term financing for newly constructed buildings and renovations at Icy Straight Point. And a newly constructed large ship docking facility at IC Street and the refinancing of existing loans, which we actually have in-house right now, secured by ISP. It's a cruise ship destination point that has been operating since 2004. We did the original loan in here in 2004. The complex includes renovated buildings from the 1900s salmon cannery, and new improvements include restaurant, heritage cultural center, and a welcome center, and also zip line facilities. There will be approximately 52 construction jobs and 35 permanent jobs that will be created with this request. The management of Huna Totem Corporation, it's a village corporation created by ANCSA for the village of Huna. It's a parent company of the borrower and is a guarantor. They have a 9-member board of directors that oversees TC management team. Larry Gaffney is the president and CEO. Larry is here with us today. Where did Larry go? There you are. You're hiding. Hello, Larry. How are you? He has a background in investment banking and capital management. The collateral, we would take a first deed of trust with an assignment of rents on the IC Straight Point site and improvements. It's a 34-acre site located on Cannery Row in Huna. We would also include a lien on the FF&E, furniture, fixtures, and equipment. This was appraised in January of this year for $35 million to $80. The appraised loan to value would be 71%. And using the appraiser's projected net operating income for the project, the debt service coverage would be 20.6 to 1. We do list the related debt of approximately $6.4 million. However, that loan would be paid off with this credit. the strengths that we see in this credit. It's been a successful and proven tourism destination facility. The project has a history of proven management, profitable operations. The use of funds is for the expansion, as I've indicated, of the existing business. Parent company has the financial capacity to provide additional financial support. Project has strong community support, job creation, and retention. And the city of Hoonah receives the positive economic impact of a 5% sales tax, and the state of Alaska cruise ship passenger tax. As I've mentioned, there is a BIE guarantee. That's a good benefit to this loan. And the $24 million cost of the new dock is offset in part by a $14.1 million grant from the state of Alaska. We also have to put down perceived weaknesses. The positive cash flow that is shown is dependent on one new cruise ship being added to the ISP location as a port call. They definitely feel they'd be able to do that, but it's not in place currently. Feasibility study was done by McDowell Group. They usually do a good job of their feasibility studies, and we thought that it provided sound reasoning and justification for the addition of a cruise ship in this location. And any ships that would be added, of course, would have a positive impact on the cash flow. So this loan is also being recommended by staff. So with that, I would open it up for questions, if you have any.
Mr. Wilson?
Just quick, the BIA guarantee is on the total loan or on our portion?
Total loan.
Total loan, okay.
And pro rata split.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, just on page 9, when the ADA balance is of $6,484,910 is paid off, what was the interest rate on that loan?
Do you recall? 7? I'm sorry. Yeah. What was still?
It's a fixed rate, but I'm not quite sure what it is. It's probably slightly.
Larry, do you know the interest rate on your loan? Was it 7 point something?
I think it's got a 5 handle since the reset.
Oh, you modified? Okay, he modified his interest rate, so he's probably closer to current market.
And,
Greg,
Mr. Chairman, and I'm not sure who in this room might know the answer, but I thought there was an amendment in the legislature to take that $5 head tax.
Okay.
Because it was an issue in Juneau. So perhaps the revenue department might speak.
Well, I can answer that question. In Senate Finance this year, there was an amendment that removed the 5% head tax. The first 5 ports of call, $5 share from the operating budget. And in the conference committee, which passed, of course, there's no, and in the bill that's before the legislature right now, that has been restored. But it was restored in such a way that head tax could be reduced someplace so it would be between $4 and $5 in 2000, because there's a negative balance in the cruise ship passenger tax fund of a couple million dollars. So that would be prorated. That reduction would be prorated against the $15.5 million estimated total for that. So it could be just set $5 to somewhere between $4 and $5. But we don't know what that would be at this point.
It's not germane to the loan anyway. It's
not germane to the loan, but it's a benefit to the community.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, I have a couple quick questions for you. On your portfolio diversification, we're increasing from 19.7 to 24% on a statewide basis, and then up to 35% to 50% in the Southeast region.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a policy, or give me a policy of guidelines on percentage portfolio for that?
No, we do not have a policy on that. But okay, let me see here. 24%. Yeah. We've looked at the tourism segment in the past because another type of property that is in tourism is hotels, and you know, we have a fair amount of hotels. When we got up to about a quarter of our portfolio in tourism, we dealt with one of our contractors who did a poll with other authorities throughout the United States to see how they looked at exposure. And because quite frankly, in the banking community, which is my background, once you get up to about 25%, you know, you're starting to get a little nervous about your exposure. Their input back to us, because we were an economic development authority, a company, rather than a bank, was they were comfortable up to a 40% exposure. So that was just input that we had. Since then, generally speaking, tourism numbers have kind of flattened out. But this, you know, again, increases them.
So this loan, a dock, is considered tourism?
I think you're,
I mean,
you know, that
it's
not, it's not just the dock. It's the destination point. The collateral is, the dock is part of it. Part of these funds are going to build the dock, and the dock is going to benefit, you know, this destination point, because right now they have the lighter customers. So you know, it will improve.
Well, I'm just wondering about, again, it's the dock, and when I'm not down there if the cruise ships are the only ones that use it, or is it, you know, it's to me, it's infrastructure to a community, unless this is specifically isolated that no one else can ever use it or
right.
Anything else. So
yeah, I think the source,
like an airport. That
I think the source of income is tourism related, and mm-hmm. I think that's kind of the
but, it's, but it's an infrastructure project. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Correct.
Mr. Chairman, I was just going to note for the board that the state of Alaska through DCRA has a legislatively a named recipient grant of, I think there's $14.1 million going into that dock from the state.
So, John, I would suggest that at some point in time the board visits a policy about exposure in industry.
Yeah, certainly. And then as a follow-on, if I may, I think we have identified, you know, as sectors to follow the economic trends, oil and gas, mining, tourism, fishing, and then general economy on a regional basis. And then I solicit any other input for industries that we would want to continue to track.
Yeah, we may get to this point where you assign a percentage of it to a certain market.
Government.
Any further questions from the board?
No, but Mr. Chair, I did want to point out this has the world's longest zip line. You should go ride it sometime.
Well, after it's done, we have to check on that asset.
Well, it's already an existing one.
Captain Russell here is going to take
a look. Russell's already been on it.
So have I.
Okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How long is it?
Long.
5,300 and some feet, I think.
Oh, my goodness.
Over a mile.
I'm headed there.
I think we need to do this inspection.
He's a drag.
Yeah. But it's a mile long, there's got to be some elevation to it.
Yeah, is it 1,300 feet or
something? 1,500 feet.
It's really fast.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that, Jerry. Well, if there's no more questions, I'll call for the question.
Question.
Thank you. Friend?
Mr. Wilkins.
Aye.
Deputy Commissioner Perry.
Aye.
Ms. Tiger.
Yes.
Mr. Hughes.
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett.
Yes.
Mr. Vick.
Abstain.
Mr. Bruce.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Okay, item number G, next up on our agenda is resolution G15-04.
Chair?
No.
Yes. If I would, item 7F.
Oh, I'm sorry, I missed it. Yeah. Didn't we just see this one?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
Loan resolution number L14-04, Loving Trust, that we saw last board meeting?
So last November.
Yeah. Okay.
Second, and Mr. Chairman, I respectfully call for the question.
Okay. No discussion. Has everybody had a chance to read it?
Question.
Any reason we should vote against this, Chris? Thank you.
No. There is some tension.
Mr. Wilkin.
Aye.
Deputy Commissioner Perry.
Aye.
Ms. Nygaard.
Yes.
Mr. Hughes.
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett.
Yes.
Mr. Dick.
Yes.
Mr. Bruce.
Yes.
Motion carries.
This line is the front corner.
Yeah.
Man can't.
Okay, now we're up to resolution G15-04, authorizing development finance loan for Bluecrest Energy.
Move approval.
Second.
It's before us. John?
All right, item 7G, resolution G15-04, regards the approval of development project financing for Bluecrest Energy LLC. This time we have Jim Hemsap on the phone. Jim? All right, let me turn up your volume. Give me a second here.
Thanks.
Okay. We'll ask Jim Hemsap to present and call on others as needed.
Thank you. Jim?
Good afternoon, Gordon, and thank you again for indulging my patient's testimony, so to speak. I'm trying to be a good boy and learning hard at school along here. You have in front of you resolution G15-04, which is authorization for ADA to proceed to the completion of the deal on a direct financing loan with Bluecrest Energy for the purpose of Bluecrest Energy owning a 3,000 horsepower drill rig. You have the due diligence and finance plan and the executive memo, and I would like to speak from the handout that you have on the project summary and the quad sheet, starting off with just put the project in perspective. This is an onshore facility, production facility, and drilling facility that we did drilling in, extended reach drilling into Cosmopolitan Leaks. Facility located at Anchor Point, some 70 miles south of the Chisora refinery, which is the recipient of the crude oil that was produced. Financing will allow Bluecrest to procure a new rig, specifically a new rig of the lease rate for two reasons. One is looking at the value of the cost of lease rigs, as well as the size and the specialty nature of this rig. The cost of the lease of the rig would far exceed the cost of Bluecrest owning the rig and financing it through ADA, making the project significantly more viable and appropriate for Cook Inlet. The intent of having a new construction rig is to avoid significant refurbishing problems that occur with some of the other rigs around the market, and they wanted to make sure they had a rig that was capable, reliable, and appropriate for their project, and they said reach and the production of the opportunities that the Cosmopolitan's present. The project itself, from a revenue source, we're producing nominally 8,000 barrels a day of crude oil from a Cosmopolitan lease that has been reviewed and showing significant in excess of, showing significant reserve that will allow the up to 8,000 barrels a day of profit in excess of 8,000 barrels a day of production. The product is moved to the Chisora refinery by truck with the current plan, 20-25 trucks per day of oil to move to the Chisora refinery. As I mentioned, this is a own of a rig. The rig will be utilized and operated by the experienced Alaska contractors. Bluecrest is in discussions with two, both operating Alaska currently, both have experience in Alaska operating drilling this style and size, although not quite the same. It's one of the bigger drillers, but the biggest drill rig in Alaska. Currently, we look at the reason for the rig and where this is in the purchase. The rig count in the United States from Baker Hughes is 132 rigs, of which 50% are up and running. while that would imply that there's a large number of rigs that are available, really only 41 are capable of drop drilling the depth of rigs necessary for this particular project. Most of the idle rigs that you see on the counter are in the Williston, North Dakota, and Permian Basin, and are drilling at a much shallower basis. Blue Crest has been monitoring the rig availability, types and styles and conditions of rigs, and has elected in their decision from their project model to move as with the new rig, that start construction of the rig would be of what is available. The market has increased mud pump capacity, which is important on the extended beach, as well as the mast capacity, which is important to move particularly down both the extended beach. A larger engine size, we talked about the 3,500 horsepower, dual fuel capability, which will allow them for a startup. On diesel, when they start producing oil with the associated gas, they will need natural gas as fuel and reduce their operating costs. The rig is state-of-the-art in terms of safety, reliability, and operations, and would provide the drilling capacity for the project over the next 7 to 10 years as they drill their plan of 33 wells in the Chicago Metropolitan area. This project does suit Ada's mission. It most definitely will contribute to quickening of production and reduced reliance on imported products from the solar refinery. It's also important to note this rig is, again, we talk about Cook Inlet being in a revitalized point, but Cook Inlet is still in a relatively fragile position in terms of development of the resources there. This rig and this project will support and anchor Cook Inlet revitalization of the oil production facility, as in doing so, reach out to those support issues around that, providing jobs as well as providing the capacity for those jobs to be there, which will expand the other production facilities come online. One of the things that New Explorers produce to look at is what the resources that's available in the area, including human resource. Like other issues, including the air travel industry, having a large tenant on board that helps support companies there will breed success for other companies coming in when they know that there is at least organizations that are working in the area. We estimate up to 150 jobs during the development, construction of the 150 jobs in the development drilling, 150 jobs in the construction of the production facility, 20 to 30 jobs around the clock, facility operations and maintenance, and up to 25 or so trucking jobs in full production. Looking at the aggregate numbers, this also would provide about 150 direct and indirect long-term jobs based on the ratios necessary for the facility. From the borough's perspective, the project will add $20 million in property taxes to the Kenai Borough and provide royalties and tax revenue of $200 million for the first 10 years of operation of the facility. From our perspective, the loaning of $30 million would leverage close to $300 million in private investment in both the facility and the drilling program that we've done on. So it's a project that meets Ada's mission. It's a project that can support a business case that allows for payments and revenues. And we'd just like to touch on the main business case or the financing aspects of this. From our perspective, we're looking at, as I mentioned, the $30 million loan and $40 million project cost. We'll be looking at a 15-month payment holiday while interest accrues. It will be attached to the capitalized principal. The rate at that 15 months will be setting a treasury rate plus 450 basis points, which is consistent with the regulation, and then when they move into operation, the remaining 69 months will be fixed at a 10% term loan. We expect that the return to Ada will be approximately $13 million over the life of the loan, which is a 7-year term. We also received a $20,000 application fee, and the $300,000 commitment fee to the loan plus expenses deducted in the calculations will be deducted from the $30 million of the loan. We've had the rig evaluated by a third-party consulting company, Solson XP, who both validate the current purchase price of the bare built rig by itself prior to tubulars and other things coming on that could bring the price up to $40 million, which would be startup at $28 million. Our loan amount on principal after capitalization would be $32 million. The value of the rig itself, an estimate as a distressed sale or a short-term sale, have been making calls with a number of the producers in the area, would be approximately $25 million plus only $2 million for equipment. But we've also asked for an additional reserve account to be established at $15 million by the end of 2016 based on credits, and if the credits aren't available, capital commitments from Blue Crest to fund that reserve account at $15 million. So between the estimated sale value of 25 and the $15 million reserve account, our startup will have $40 million collateral for a $32 million loan. Additionally, you will adjust that collateral as the project progresses based on the principal, but at no time will the loan security be less than 120% of the difference between the current value of the rig and the current principal amount left outstanding on the rig. So we believe we've got ourselves covered significantly on the collateral issue for this rig. Looking at risks, oil prices obviously are a problem at any time. With our aspect of the loan and other project financing commitments, this project would have to generate sufficient revenues to make all payments at $30 a barrel. To mention, we've looked at the rig account and the rig value. The credit that we're looking at from the state perspective is assisting to fund the reserve account. At this time, there's no anticipated change for the remainder of calendar year 2015. For fiscal year 2016, which would be the period in which the credits would be made available for this rig. Staff that will be working on the rig are experienced, including their Alaskan operations vice president. Excuse me, while I change the page. Just a little bit too many papers on a very small desk in Mom's house. At any rate, we'll end fumbling with that. There are lots of vice presidents experienced with operations. He and I, project manager on the North Slope, on a $2 billion project and experience in oil and gas development. And we'll be managing the, Steve Matthews, the name of the court, honestly, Free and I, on the next chapter of development on the North Slope, which is by local support, leadership of the team. The character and the quality of the Blue Crest staff has been reviewed and addressed by Eric in our report, the conference report, and they are found to be of good character. Additionally, we've made contact with both HDR, who's doing the permitting work for Blue Crest right now. They are updating all payments at Blue Crest, and in a letter that Tim Gallagher sent us from HDR, they are looking forward to their continued operation at Blue Crest. Based on the values that they see in the Blue Crest staff, of, as Tim puts it, honor, stewardship, and fidelity. BCE, in his words, has a forward-thinking mentality and they think to identify project risks, not only to have a sound operation, but to be a good neighbor. Additionally, M&H Engineering in Houston, which has been doing their facility engineering, also communicated to us in Blue Crest. Has been, all our accounts are in good standing and has been a good business partner. So we're working with a company that has both good character and standing, and the character aspect of the loan is one of the key things. And then just in closing, we want to turn to the last aspect that's attached to a graphic to your package that indicates expenses versus revenues at two prices of crude oil, both $45 a barrel crude and $75 a barrel crude, and our expenses, which are the total expenses that are in place and shown on the far left of the bars, and in all cases, produce oil productions as the facility continues to grow through oil. the revenues are comfortably in excess of the expenses. Based in that spread of $45 to $75 a barrel of crude oil. I would like just to point out just a couple more things. One is the wood manufacturer, Moderco, is building a cold region rig. It is not an Arctic class rig. It is a rig that's suitable for operating in winter and cold conditions in Finland. It is, however, a rig that could be insulated and brought up to harder conditions if there was a need to assure the use of a slope. For that part, their account is company is debt-free, has a sizable line of credit, and there is very little risk that there would be any problems whatsoever of them being able to fulfill and complete this job on the construction of this rig fabrication, this rig going forward. Blue Crest and their staff, including Steve Massey, will be provided oversight of the construction of this application. From an A perspective, our release of funds will be based on vendor invoices and our review of those vendor invoices to make sure that what we're paying for is what we're getting. And Verco has agreed to make sure that they do not progress payments and invoices they're presenting are for work to date only, as opposed to a progress payment or a timely payment. That we're only going to be paying as time goes on for what work is absolutely being done. I think at that point, other than I would like to note that we received letters of support both from the Kenai Borough, from Mike Navarre, as well as Soldatna, both looking forward to this project being on site and Ada participating in this, using this tool of loan participation, not loan participation, direct loan, and helping make the Cook Inlet the oil and gas province that it knows it can be. And I think at this point, I will just be quiet.
Thank you, Jim. Questions from the board? Gary?
I have a few. Thank you. Jim, on page 3 of 5, the chart, figure 1.
Three of 5 is the memo?
Yes, in the board memo, yes. So yes. I just want to be clear that there's a sentence there at the bottom of the paragraph that demonstrates break-even cost for the project, estimated less than $40 per barrel. Did they stress the model, and what was the break-even cost?
There's a certain amount of confidential here in this number in terms of exact operating costs. We would say that it's, in public, less than $40 a barrel. Less is a small number below $40 a barrel.
Okay, thank you. They speak at the bottom of page 1, or you speak at the bottom of page 1, led by a qualified drilling subcontractor. Do they know who that is?
We are aware of the two contractors are currently in negotiations with. As I mentioned before, they are both Alaskan. They are contractors operating Alaska. One has experience and is operating currently in Cook Inlet. One is currently operating on the North Slope. I don't really want to mention names because they're still in negotiations.
Okay. So I don't know much about the drill rigs, but I have a friend that has led a Alaskan drilling company for 15 years. So I called him and I said, "So we got this thing in front of us tomorrow. Talk to me a little bit about it." And so what I'm going to say comes from him and poses the questions. He said, "You know, that's a really a big rig. That's 3,000 horsepower is a big rig in Alaska." So he said, I don't understand. He was aware of this rig, and they had been approached to participate in this in some manner. He said, "I don't understand why Blue Crest wants to own the rig and operate it." He said, "You know, things can go south really quickly when these things go bad." And he said, "Most companies recognize that, and that's why they hire people like us to take care of the drilling." So he just posed that question. He said, "I really don't know why they want to do that." So let me ask you that question. Why does Blue Crest want to do something that other people are in the business of doing?
There are two things just to open them. Maybe it will help clarify that. First, the reason that Blue Crest is looking at in ownership with qualified contractor to operate it for them, but own the rig, is one of economics. In today's environment, for the rig that they believe is necessary to be able to drill, to reach in the sands, and all the other geologic characteristics, that they can do this safely, reliably, and timely, they've got a rig that is very robust, would be probably the best way to describe it. Is it a little bit more than they need? Probably. But when they look at their costs and both purchase and what the value that they can get on a rig at today's environment versus a lease, they can get a rig that gives them that extra horsepower that puts them not reaching the limit of what their rig is capable of, but the rig can reach where they're directed to within comfortable operating parameters of the rig. And in doing so, that puts the risk of having downhole problems and operational problems and safety problems at a much lower level. Now, no one does this because they want to be good citizens only. And Blue Crest does want to be good citizens and safe. The simple fact of the matter is, in the downturn that we're having now in these rigs, is that there are some bargains that are available. And they're able to get a bargain on this rig in terms of the purchase with aid and assistance on the financing, where this is appropriately less than what their lease cost would be, but allows this project to be successful and robust at varying crude prices. Keep in mind, when this decision and discussions were going on last summer, the price of crude was significantly higher than it is now. It offered a lot of stability. Now we're down to an area where we're getting close. We're still above that break-even point. We're above that break-even point where they can sell. The issue of owning the rig, I would point out that Cook Energy owns not only the rig that's on their Osprey platform, but rig, they own the rig that they're doing their onshore drilling. Aurora on the west side owns the rig. Hillcorp owns their own rig in Cook Inlet. So in the Cook Inlet area, having a dedicated rig in some of these facilities that the developers, the producers own, is not unusual. Okay. It may be unusual for the North Slope because of where the oil companies were and the amount of drilling they're doing now. But for these Cook Inlet producers, this is making sense. And from an economic sense, lease versus buy, they're willing to buy this at an annual cost that's less than what they would lease it for, and have, at the end of this term, still the equity in the rig that they could sell to an operator that might want to buy it from them and who might use it someplace else. It's just simply, in their mind, an appropriate business decision.
Yeah. Thank you. That's good information. This will be, because this is a relatively new company, this is their first rig. They don't have experience in owning or operating a 3,000 horsepower rig. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
But that's why they would hire.
Yeah, I understand.
As I mentioned, they're looking at two qualified operators.
I'd like to
have the experience in operating a rig like that. So they're not operating it.
Jim, hold on, Jim.
Okay, thank you, Jim. I'd like to understand the reserve. So this rig wouldn't be marketed in Alaska, it would be marketed worldwide. So I want to understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, so I understand the reserves, $15 million in state credits go into that. And if this thing goes badly, then we would have $15 million to apply against it, and to be whole, we would just have to sell the rig for $12 million to come up with our $27 million. So is that the protection we have, or are those reserves going to go somewhere else?
We are creating a lien against those reserves. They will not go somewhere else.
So in a fire sale, we could sell this thing for $10 million and or $12 million and we'd be whole with our $27
million. Actually, we would sell it for $17 million and be whole. So we'd also recover the full capital value of the loan, 30 plus the capitalized interest.
So we would have to sell it for $17 million to be whole.
Correct.
Okay. All right. And my last question, what if we don't do this? What will they do?
Well, that's a good question. We've been having a lot of conversations and trying to understand where Blue Crest is. If we don't do this project, I'm going to rephrase this. If Ada is unable to participate in this loan on this drill rig, the most likely result, my opinion, would be that the project itself would be delayed a minimum of a year. Because what's going to happen is a little bit of a waterfall in this. One is that the Newcrest owners and their equity partners are fully funding the equity of the production facility itself. That's where they're going to make their money, is the production facility. If we're not able to assist them alone, that they're going to have to divert some of that money from the production facility into the fix of the rig, and that will either delay or downsize the production facility to such an extent that their economics are questionable, or they're going to have to look for the debt facility, which they're reserving for drilling, and they're funding from the drilling facility to the debt facility. Now, the other waterfall aspect of this is that we have been told that it's true, as far as you know, from our work with Mustang and with our Singapore partner as well, is that there are a number of people in the loaning companies that are working, that look to ADA for some aspect of surety in the profit, not guaranteed in the funding, but their risk management is looking at ADA and doing their property diligence and understanding of the business locally. Not so much that we're responsible. We have no guarantees with anyone, but we do provide, for lack of a better word, comfort level to outside financing coming in. They see that a state entity, or whatever description, is behind the project and interested in what they're doing, and they gain comfort from that, and they take that loan. I cannot predict what their debt financing will be if ADA comes out. So the project may go ahead. My opinion is it'll be delayed a minimum of a year, and the economics will change, but I'm not entirely sure where the long-term capacity of the project is.
Thank you, Jim. Mr. Chair, thank you. I will just say for the record, I intend to support this, but in the last year, we're about $100 million now into the world's biggest poker hand. And I'm not sure I'm quite, I don't know what number that should be, but I think I'll know it when I see it. I'm just getting a little bit uncomfortable about our exposure in that market. So having said that, thank you for the time and indulgence.
Mr. Chairman?
You're welcome, sir.
Fred? Two thoughts. One, we might take that question regarding our exposure and group it with some of the other questions we put to Mr. Springsteen for our future consideration. And secondly, Mr. Hemseth, if I may continue, Mr. Chairman, I had a question off of page 8. I just wanted to make sure and explore the risk. So the entire production from this is slated to go into Tesoro's Nikiski refinery and basically supplant the imported crude, if I understood the rationale. My question is just what risks the Tesoro refinery represents to the project's cash flow, the age and condition of that facility, its capacity, its robustness of its ownership. I just wonder if you could elaborate on Ada's view of the receiving entity from this production.
Yes, sir. Let me do my best to paint a picture. The Tesoro refinery is the only source of ultra low unleaded diesel in the state of Alaska. Actually, I misspoke. There's a small refinery in Valdez also produces ultra low sulfur diesel. Their capacity of 100,000 barrels a day is their throughput, and they actually get a little bigger. The refinery isn't going anyplace. They've done the ultra sulfur diesel 7-8 years ago in terms of that expansion, was a commitment to maintain the product capacity in the state. They also market through a variety of different branding, so the risk of Tesoro not being available to take a crude product that essentially is what the refinery is designed for is a very, very low risk. It's probably the best way to answer that right now.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to push on that a little bit, though. I'm not sure that we foresaw the closing of the refinery in Mr. Wilkins' neck of the woods, and I would like, to the degree you understand it, I'd like to understand the age of the refinery, its condition, its modernization. It's refineries get to a point where they're underinvested in, and they can tip over in a deceptively short period of time.
You could have a fire and take it out of business for
sure.
A long time. That has to be unbelievable for it.
I just wonder how you see. I didn't see it on the list of risks. I appreciated the list of risks, but there's a low oil production risk and mitigation, but there's not a Tesoro receiving refinery judgment of risk and mitigation, and I'd like to hear some discussion of that.
We did not examine Tesoro as a major risk or do any significant analysis. My experience and exposure to the refinery is what I said, they invested 7-8 years ago in the ultra low sulfur diesel to do that. With all due respect to the refinery in Mr. Wilkins' district, the Flint Hills refinery has always been a marginal refinery. It was designed as a topping plant for a $2 million barrel a day crude pipeline. It has no upgrading capacity. It basically produced jet fuel, some diesel, no diesel that's specific for the ultra low sulfur diesel, fuel oil, and what little gasoline comes off of the vacuum tower. That refinery had it in its design firing crude oil as a burning as opposed to crude oil and natural gas, which pretty much every other refinery in the world does, became economically challenged to contain on. And the cost that they were charging for their predominant product, which was jet fuel, was higher than the airlines consortium XS Stevens are willing to pay, in so much that they constructed at their own cost new storage at XS Stevens to allow them to take imported jet fuel to fill those tanks and to meet the low at the Flint Hill market. To sell itself in the jet fuel, while they produced jet fuel and its purchase and use, was never truly impacted by that. And they were cost competitive with other refineries that would bring the product. Flint Hills refinery was truly price challenged on that. So there isn't a good comparison between Flint Hills and Soro because one was essentially a straddle plant, topping plant for very, very light end, putting all of their bottoms, for lack of a better word, back into the pipeline. The Soro was constructed as a full service refinery from gasoline, jet fuel, diesel, fuel oil, and now their investment in the ultra oil sulfur diesel market. Relative to their age, well, just let me say I've worked in refineries or a lot of the soil refinery is now. They do, I cannot speak to their maintenance. Cannot. I would think it is an assumption that we're making on our part that because of the market where they, what their position is in the Alaskan market, that they maintain the refineries so they can keep production. The refinery that isn't producing isn't making money. I would be more than happy offline to have a Tesoro refinery evaluation prepared for you.
Mr. Chairman, that goes beyond my question. I appreciate the comparison and I appreciate the answer. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Crystal?
I just have one quick question here. Over the life of the field, the total royalties to the state could exceed $700 million. Is that within the life of the field, 7 to 10 years? Is that right?
I'm sorry, it's not hard, but we were estimating $200 million, not $700
million. Oh, okay, I'm just reading the report on the economic impact. That was the total royalties to the state. On page 18.
Page 8?
18. The economic impact 18. Analysis. I just want to make sure I was reading that right. Right here, 700 million.
We underestimated on the clutch. Excuse me.
We have life of the field versus
$200 million on the 30-year life project. The $200 million that we were looking at was on 20.
Okay.
Okay. Questions, Jerry? I've got a couple for you, Jim. One, we don't know what the statewide what our statewide exposure is in the oil and gas industry, counting what we just authorized for the camp up on the North Slope with Mustang and whatnot. So, is there a ballpark counting this? How many dollars that is?
We have $50 million into Mustang. Excuse me. We have $70 million into Mustang, including the road, and then we would have $30 million into this facility, and that's all ADA has right now in the state of Oregon. Yeah.
Chris, what do you have? That camp's oil and gas. But that camp is.
Yes.
How much was that again?
I'm sorry. I didn't help on that. Sorry.
That was a question for Chris, Jim.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Thank you.
70, 20, 30.
Yeah. $120 million.
Mm-hmm.
What's our total? What is our
total? Where's the extra 20 coming from? What about this?
Camp.
That's
exposure
from camp.
We just did the camp. That's a man camp and dead horse that was on the agenda for today.
Oh,
in lung participation.
Sorry. I didn't include that. You're correct.
What is that? What is that percentage overall, Michael?
Probably under the IFA.
Okay,
15%.
Twenty. Okay. Thank you. That was one question. So Jim, when do they plan, if the loan is approved, when will they start construction or putting the camp together? The drill rig,
if the loan is approved, Blue Crest would move, I'm going to guess, conservatively, within the next 2 weeks, put their initial deposit down on the drill rig under construction. Our funds, once our condition precedents are met, and we've got all the documentation, which they haven't worked on. So I think we're actually really close to having everything we need, that we have a good state of the condition precedent. But I don't have that with me right now. We would probably be funding within 4 weeks, 8 to 20.
Okay, and when would they put their contractor on? When do they anticipate, after approval, putting their contractor on?
Their operating contractor? I can't answer that question. Benji Johnson is at the meeting, and he might be able to answer that if it doesn't mess up his negotiations.
When?
We are very close to finalizing those negotiations right now, so we're within 2 to 3 weeks. We've been holding off to make sure that we're going to go forward with this rig, and this is approved, we will. At that point, then we're able to finally negotiate with one of these two parties. So we don't actually need the rig contractor, of course, until the rig is finished, and that's a few months out. We start construction on it immediately.
So my question for that is, wouldn't you want your contractor involved in the design and construction of what they're going to operate?
We have rig people, experts that are involved in that, and we have been dealing with both of those parties at length on the design. They both know that they have both been involved in the design of this rig.
Okay, but the contractor won't be involved in the design or the fabrication?
No, the design is finished.
Okay.
So, yes, and we will, as soon as we move forward, the contractor will be involved in the fabrication.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. A question I have for Jim. Have you done an economic analysis? Should something happen to the Tesoro Refinery on the economic viability of the project, should they have to, if there's adequate storage for crude, and if they had to tanker it to a refinery down south?
No, sir, we have not. We do not consider a long-term store shutdown to be significant risk, so we do not do that analysis on that.
Would it be safe to say there's storage available in the cook inlet?
Storage available in cook inlet. I couldn't tell you if there's storage available for 6 months or 9 months or 2 weeks. My guess would be there's probably storage for 3 to 4 weeks.
Whether it's going to be an anticipated volume, production volume. If that refinery goes down, I assume the next choice is either Valdez and or Pacific Northwest for the product. And I was just curious if you guys...
If the refinery was to go down...
you got to go somewhere with the product. You can't turn it off.
Product to Valdez.
Maybe.
Yeah, I can answer that. Absolutely. There, at Nikiski Dock, there is the ability to ship both in, receive oil in, and out. In fact, Tesoro does that routinely. Tesoro brings oil in from the west side of Cook Inlet, and they bring oil, A&S mostly, and some Bakken crude into their refinery. They refine a portion of the oil, but instead of taking empty ships back down south, they actually take the partially refined product back south. So they are continually rotating and keeping those tankers full. In the event that that refinery were to go down, we have looked at that. Yes, the Cook Inlet crude would be exported, whether it goes all the way south to the Pacific Northwest or whether it goes into Valdez, we're not sure. But that's just, it's a matter of, you know, a few dollars per barrel in additional cost, lowering our effective.
So you have an alternative in case that
yeah,
that's
right.
Mr. Chairman, you should identify yourself.
Mr. Yeah. Chair,
hold on, Jim, just for the record, could you identify yourself?
I am Benjamin Johnson. I'm the president and CEO of Blue Crest Energy.
Thank you. Jim, did you have a comment?
I did, and the one comment was, I truly do understand the question, and it's not some question related to the solar refinery. From our perspective, we are not treating this as a loan. The question simply becomes one of, does Blue Crest have the capacity to make payments? And part of that capacity is based on production. We did not do detailed analysis of what would happen in the event of a major shutdown of the Tesoro refinery. Quite frankly, that would be a discussion that we would have with Blue Crest. And one thing that ADA does provide is getting ADA in terms of our business, say, solvent in the state, we could, and we have done other loans as well, make an agreement to have a payment holiday. In the event that there didn't appear to be anything that was going to be saving that and the export was not there, we would execute our lien on both the reserve account and the rig and make ourselves whole. I know it sounds a little harsh, but this is in fact a loan, and those are the terms and conditions we're putting into a loan. If we don't make payments, the loan is in default, but we execute our default right. What Benji has described, what you and the commission have described in terms of risk cases with the solar refinery are not ones that we consider to be major risk. We can, in fact, do that if it was necessary. So if there was a refinery outage of some significance, we would be having exactly these discussions, whether how related to the fault. But we are always protected by our collateral on this.
Thank you, Jim. My last question, and I don't know if it's proprietary information, and maybe the Blue Crest representative can answer it. What is the anticipated savings of owning a rig versus leasing a rig over the life of the project?
We have obtained bids for leasing as well as the purchase. Without getting into the, if I can avoid giving an exact number, it's a high percentage difference of cost. Roughly on the order of probably 30% difference in our cost on a monthly basis between paying the best lease numbers that we receive versus what it would cost to pay the ADA loan and what the money that we put in, all of our cost on that rate.
Okay, thank you.
Question? You ready
for
a question?
I was going to ask for any further questions. I don't mind. You've been hanging out with Gary too much.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, question's been asked. Karen, would you pull the board, please?
Mr. Wilkins.
Aye.
Deputy Commissioner Paradis.
Aye.
Ms. Nygaard.
Yes.
Mr. Hughes.
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett.
Yes.
Mr. Dick.
Yes.
Mr. Pruitt.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you very much, Board. I appreciate your, truly, I appreciate your interest and your questions. They are insightful questions that help us do a better job, and I do appreciate it.
Thank you, Jim, for putting it together.
Thanks, Jim.
Director comments.
Okay, Director comments. Item 8A, draft internal policy memo on materiality guidelines. Regards 8 internal policy on non-material monetary changes to loan participations. And this was prompted by a request for a candidate that had a loan participation that was approved, and then they came back to us to request a change to the monetary amount. And I just wanted to read from the background of the memorandum that I provided to the board. Loan participation resolutions generally contain language in Section 1 of the resolution that the executive director is authorized to approve such non-material changes in the terms and conditions of the loan, and the authority's participation as the executive director in his discretion determines appropriate. Accordingly, there is a need to establish a threshold for non-material monetary changes, provided all other loan participation provisions are met, such as loan to value, participating share, debt service coverage guarantees, etc. So my request today is for input from the board on materiality thresholds, and at a later date, an approval of an agreed policy. I would like to add that Chris Anderson can provide some insight into traditional banking practices.
Are there any questions from the board?
Are you looking for answers today?
No, I mean, there's a request for today, but certainly to take, review, consider, and then at a later date come to some agreement on what appropriate policy is.
Why don't we do this, if you don't mind? Why don't, Chris, you put something to pen to paper and to John and send it to the board members as far as traditional banking policies, mm-hmm. So we have something that we can contemplate, and then we'll come back and visit this subject.
Okay.
Would that work? All right. Thank you.
And then other items, loan reports, project matrices, updated project fact sheets, and education calendars are provided for your review. If there are questions on the materials, appropriate staff are available to field questions.
John, would you look at that traffic? I don't think it's correct. It doesn't include the Blue Crest loan. No need to spend time on it if you just look at it. If it's right, it's right. If it's wrong, please read that. Thank you.
Very existing.
It says across the top, it says including Blue Crest loan. Just take this back.
Which one are you looking at?
Oh, okay. Yes, sir. And this is the industry diversity of loan and bond sale participations. And then it has this word with Blue Crest loan, but this is actually a representation of loan participation program and bond sale participations, but does not include Blue Crest. So I appreciate that. We'll correct that.
Okay. Is there anything else on your list here, John?
And I think there was the question of facility delivery dates related to potential Pentex acquisition.
Okay. So what members of the board would like to see any of the Pentex facilities? LNG plant, Crystal, Fred? Okay. So, Jerry?
If I have to, if I have a date, I'd love to, but if I have a date, I'll come down. If not, I'll.
Jerry?
It's me.
It depends. Again, yeah, I'm going to be in Anchorage, so I'm not going to make a trip.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, John, you'll need to poll the board on potential jet dates for everybody. I'm interested also.
Okay.
Under item E, it has the board meeting scheduled in Fairbanks for the 25th of June. Did we have a tour or something we wanted to do the day before?
Yes, in
a reception or anything in Fairbanks?
Yes, sir. And the thought was that actually to have the board arrive on June 24th to be able to tour distribution facilities. and then on the evening of the 24th to have a reception in Fairbanks, including local, regional, state government, the ADA board, and others from the business community. And then on the 25th to have the board meeting. So those are revisions on the or thoughts on the schedule.
Okay. So everybody on your schedules, the 24th to be traveling. I assume we get up there before noon, have the tour in the afternoon, you know, have the reception, and then the next morning start the board meeting fairly early, not 10 o'clock, but and then get the 4 o'clock flight in the afternoon. Come back, isn't it 4:30 or something like that? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Certainly.
As a tentative time frame to shoot for, does that make sense to everybody? Okay. Or drive out to the lake, depends where you're living.
Board comments?
I'd just like to say thank you for your work too on IEP. Your name popped up all the time. I know you were in constant contact with Bob and the governor's office, pushing us along, keeping us on track. So say thank you for that too.
Well, appreciate it that you thought of it. Yeah, I think all of us have been offered stuff for the project, and I think it's the first step of many, and the first decision of many for ADA. And I appreciate everybody's support on it, actually, quite frankly. And I am here to tell you that I hope Fred does not come back with another bad knee after he gives the first update to Flavor and Commerce. Thank you, Gary. Any other board comments?
Thanks to the staff.
Thank you.
Yes, I would like to thank the staff. Again, most of them have left, but the folks that worked down in Juneau took some of the arrows, stood firm, represented us very, very well, both from the administration, ADA staff, and consultants, and also John, also the folks that work for the U.S. You know, all this information just doesn't invent itself, and so there's many folks that I probably don't even know that's going behind to get this information. We'd like to extend my thanks to them too.
Mr. Chairman, I did notice that the director of emeritus didn't feel the need to stay like the director does.
He's actually taking lessons on how to run the computer.
In case he's ever
I'll take a motion.
Move to adjourn.
Second.